Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Adi, hour number two. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to help provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tiki and Tierney, 3 hours every single day, 3 to 6 Eastern, noon Pacific. Here on a midweek Wednesday show. First hour of the books, do a little hoops here, and second season starts tonight. Although it's not 41 games, we know that. But the NBA, and I just saw this during the break. I don't know how I missed this, but Joel Embiid's going to be out at least a week with a sore knee. That's a little worrisome, somebody coming off an All-Star break.
Yeah.
Layoff.
Unless something happened at the All-Star game that we didn't really notice.
But it's soreness, so I'm guessing no. It didn't seem like it was, I mean, it wasn't positioned as a sprain.
Yeah. I remember this, BT. They knew about it beforehand, but he still played in the game. And so it was one of the, so it might not be that serious.
Then he shouldn't have played.
I agree. Of course.
You know, but the player's going to do what they're going to do, I guess. Yeah. And he will not play for at least a week or so. And 76ers, obviously, with the Tobias Harris deal. A lot of people think maybe they can, you know, find their way into the NBA Finals if they stay healthy and get right and keep going here. But the big story tonight is Carolina Duke. All right. So, number one Duke, number eight UNC, 9 Eastern tonight. They'll meet again March 9th, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just read you this one line here. This is ridiculous. All right. If you're interested in squeezing at a Cameron Indoor Stadium to watch the first installment of the legendary rivalry in 2019, you'll have to spend about $2,500, the price of the cheapest available ticket. That's just shy of the $2,674 you would have paid on January 27 for the cheapest ticket to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think it's gone up even over the last day or so.
I was just on SeatGeek and I threw in some numbers, and you know, it's in that range, somewhere in the 4,000 vicinity. I mean, listen, one of the big differences is we know Cameron is small. Mm-hmm. It's very intimate, right around 9,300 seats, where the Dean Dome, well over 20,000, right around 21 change. So right there, the disparity in size obviously is going to create a demand that's going to have these ticket prices going through the roof.
But still, that's a lot of money.
You want to pay that much to watch somebody dunk?
I don't. Really? You shouldn't. But there's a
I don't know, a
cult of stardom that exists with this Duke team this year. All the guys, whether it's Barrett or Zion Williamson or Cam Reddish, they have a great team this year. And so it's must watch. And especially if you're, you know, Carolina fans down there on Tobacco Road, it's close. And so the intensity throughout the entire state is palpable, right? You can feel it. And look, this game is going to be awesome. You know, it's going to be intense. It's going to be probably come down to the wire, even though Duke is a big favorite. I think, what's it, 9?
I didn't see that. I'm going to get about 8.
I think it's 9.
What is it?
I think it's 9.
It's 9?
I only think it's 9 because Darren Rovell tweeted, do you think that the Duke Blue Devils cover the 9? I tweeted yes. I responded yes, I think. But most people think no. I think it was 58% are saying no, that they won't cover.
I would bet Duke if I was betting this game.
So
I would bet Duke to cover.
Minus 9.
I'm not so sure Duke's going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not so sure Duke's going to cover the number.
Yeah.
I would think Duke is supposed to win this game
by
a handful of points.
Agreed.
Not the 9 that they pumped up there out of Vegas. That seems a little bit out of line here. But I think that Duke is going to handle business.
I think they're
going to suppress this.
Look, especially because it's home.
Well, that's what I mean.
And it's just hard to play there. Even the best teams get discombobulated. Like when Virginia went there earlier in the season, Virginia played, you know, they played great defense. They were all over the place in Cameron just because it's so intense. Like,
no, it's a great environment.
Oh, it's awesome.
You got to get there.
I have never been.
I've got to get to the rig, and you've got to get to Cameron.
No, I really want to see a basketball game down there for sure, especially in the Coach K era. I don't want to, like, wait. Like, oh, I'll do it next year.
Yeah, I'll do it next year.
And all of a sudden, Coach K is like, I'm out.
Yeah. Krzyzewskiville won't quite have the same ring.
No, it
won't.
There'll
be tents out there, but it's not going to feel the same.
Agreed. The thing I take away from this, BT, from this particular story that you're talking about, $2,500 per ticket. That's basically the minimum available. A lot of the seats are unavailable because it's students. It's in the student section. And so there's not a ton that you can get. And so scarcity is a big part of why the tickets are so expensive. One of them went for like $10,000, they said, which is just nuts.
I mean, that's...
But think about this. Why is it like this? It's like this because of Zion Williamson, who's just been a stud in the stat sheet and also in the highlight reels. Like, we see him every weekend. Every game that they play, there is some Zion Williamson highlight, whether it's jumping over a backboard or whether it was like when they played Virginia in Virginia, him blocking a three-point shot from a 6'8 forward, by the way. Mm-hmm. He blocked it, you know, on the wing. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like the feats of athleticism that you see from this Duke team. And then you throw in all the other guys who don't get as much recognition but are just as good. These guys are making people money, like lots of money on the secondary market, yet they see none of it, right? And there's no way for them to monetize.
You know who Zion, by the way, you know who Zion looks like there?
Who?
Jamal Mashburn a little bit.
A little bit.
A little facial, little facial resemblance.
Much
thicker.
Thicker. Like, yep. You can see the musculature.
Yes, yes. Just the face.
Yeah.
The smile, the mouth, the nose. Looks like Jamal Mashburn a little
You're
bit.
Right. Mashburn was obviously like thin. Like,
he was great. He was amazing. He could get filled up in the NBA,
by the way,
too.
He turned out to be an unbelievable businessman, too.
Yes, I know.
Went into business with Patino, I think, and a couple of things.
He made
franchises and things like that.
Was it yogurt? Was it smoothies?
Something simple.
He did something ridiculous. he was right. Smart. He was ahead of
and
the curve.
And he made a ton of money.
He's doing okay.
And he made a ton of money playing basketball, yep. But he made a ton off after as well.
But the secondary market has brought this up to a place that should not exist. Let's be very frank
about
this.
And you think about like these kids. Like, this is all because of these kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like these.
Jay-Z went to see him play at Pitt.
Yeah. I mean, when they were. LeBron went to see them play. They were playing in Philadelphia.
I know.
So.
Well, that's what's jacking up the market. These stars.
But they're must-see basketball. And they can't participate in any way. You wonder why these kids go one and done. I mean, they realize what they're missing out on, obviously, and they want to get to the league and get themselves financially secure and take care of their families for generations to come, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it's also, it's some part in the back of your mind, they got to be saying, college basketball is getting enriched and we get nothing.
Yeah, there's been an awakening for sure. There's no doubt about that. They're, you know, the student athlete and young athletes in general are far savvier than they've ever been.
Agreed.
You know, the accessibility to information, the ability to just reach out and speak to people, not just acquire information, but have a conversation, it's led to an enlightenment. We know this. It's inherently unfair, the system. It is what it is. We're not going to solve this tonight.
No.
But, you know, what I think is interesting, like, to me, it's more, I don't know. I want to see Zion Williamson in person. And I will. Eventually, I will. I'll see him in the NBA. Fully anticipate St. John's will go dancing this year. I'll be with them. Maybe they'll be in the same bracket like they were last time St. John's went a couple of years back with Lavin. That was when they had Jahlil Okafor. They were playing right after St. John's. So you never know.
I saw a mock that had St. John's and Virginia's bracket in the South.
I saw that one too. Yeah. Was that Lunardi or was that Jerry Powell?
It was Lunardi.
Yeah, they're right around 7,
I was
7,
like,
10
that'd
range.
Be awesome.
I don't want that. I don't want to see you guys that early. I don't want to see it all. And I will see him play.
Often, at some point.
Once he makes it to the NBA, I'll see him with some sort of frequency. But pertaining to the price of this game tonight for the ticket, I think it's so much more appealing, just personally speaking. I would rather pay that kind of money to watch, you know, Tyler Hansborough or Jerry Stackhouse. Not that I think Hansborough was a great player, but he had this element in the rivalry that was... that was different. This is a highlight-inducing moment. This is not, and it's a rivalry because ESPN will package it as one and as such, and the crowd will be frenetic. I get that. And yes, it's Duke, North Carolina. But don't tell me this is a great rivalry anymore. Because the kids are coming in for a year and they're gone.
No, you're right.
It's no juice.
You're right. I mean, well.
Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace, I mean, Vince Carter, come on.
Well, North Carolina holds up.
Jay Williams.
North Carolina holds up their side of the deal.
Woj pulling up his shorts and banging on the ground.
I remember all this.
That's what I miss.
North Carolina holds up their side of the deal, right? Luke May is the senior.
Yeah.
He's been there for
a while.
Luke
May excite you, though?
No.
Exactly.
I mean, he can knock down some shots.
Sure.
He's a 6'8", you know, small forward.
Yeah, he'll find a spot in the league somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
I got you.
All right, but they hold up their part. It's not, you know, the rivalry's fault that Coach K has embraced the new trend in one and dunning it in college basketball.
Oh, I hear you. I'm not saying Coach K should not embrace this new method of business to placate me. I'm certainly not saying that. Coach K's got to do what he's got to do. I'm just saying from a viewing point of view and the willingness to spend exorbitant amounts of money, I think my entertainment dollar would be stretched more.
But I don't think it's about the rivalry anymore. I don't think people are pricing this game so highly because of the rivalry.
No, I'm agreeing with. I'm not saying that they are. I'm saying that it's morphed in. It's morphed from a rivalry to
spectacle,
a one man circus, like a one man show.
Yeah,
and I guess that's okay. But I mean, how many dunks can you see?
Yeah,
how many dunks can you see? I've seen them all.
You know what it feels like, though? It feels like it's just I saw him play because they think Zion Williamson is going to be LeBron James. I don't think he's going to be LeBron James. I don't think he's a good enough shooter. Maybe he can work on
LeBron that. LeBron wasn't that great shooting. He wasn't. LeBron had to work on that jump shot.
I agree. But
and his foul shots, which still a little dicey. Not a great shooter.
Do you think he could be the next?
I look at Zion, just pertaining to his shooting mechanics. Yeah. I'll address that first.
Because he's only 6'6".
I hear you. That's why I've always said a lefty Larry Johnson. I think that Zion Williamson, I look at two things when I see a kid. I don't care if he's shooting 30. No, I don't care if he's shooting 22% from behind the arc. Anybody. I look at mechanics, okay, and I look at rotation. And, you know, there are some funky jumpers. We're talking about Lonzo Ball and Sean Marion. There's certain guys.
Yeah.
Jay Kidd had a little bit of a weird shot. It got pretty good as he got older. Mark Jackson was more like a push shot. It wasn't a conventional flick of the wrist like, you know, you see textbook. But if you could square up the shoulders coming off a pick, like if you can get set quick, because in the NBA, yeah, there's open shots, but you got to be able to, you know, catch it on the hip and go. If you can square up those shoulders regularly, like a golf swing, and find that slot regularly, and this is, you know, your arm is, I mean, it's pretty basic.
Yeah.
And you see a beautiful spin. That player, boy or girl, has a chance to be a very good shooter.
Yeah.
Then it's just repetition and depth perception.
Yeah, but what happens when his athleticism starts to falter, or he gets a significant injury at 280 pounds.
I worry about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's what you worry about.
No, I've always worried about
that. And if he was 6'10", then it's a no-brainer. It's right. He's
meaning a no-brainer that he's going to be a star, or he's going to be a star anyway. Zion Williamson is going to be a freak show if he's healthy.
Well, he's a freak show in college because he's superiorly athletic, right? Even if he's going up against a 6'10", or whatever, even taller defender, like he can best them because he can put the ball on the court, right? He can be around you and go over you, do everything, right? But when he gets to the NBA, is that advantage still going to be there?
It's going to be a different type of advantage because the ability to defend him in college will be mitigated in the NBA because you can draw somebody. Now, obviously, Duke is terrific, but in the NBA, in theory, everybody's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't just fixate on Zion Williamson in the NBA. Especially if he's got a penetrating point guard.
That's true.
You know, and the other thing is he's the second, I think I said this to you about 2 weeks ago on the air. If he were in the NBA right now, he would be the second heaviest NBA player.
Yeah.
And
which is crazy.
I know. There's
he's
definitely
still a boy. I mean, he's 19 years old.
Yeah. There's a part of me that, I mean, he jumps, oh my God. But there is a part of me that really worries how that goes through the national progression. They say from the age of 30, or the age of 28, the average American male tacks on a pound and a half a year. Now, if you're really aware of your diet.
Yeah, and diligent.
Of course, that's going to go down.
Yeah.
And conversely, you could gain 3 a year if you're sloppy and you don't watch what you eat and you're drinking it. But I think it's going to be a day-to-day maintenance for him when he gets to a certain point in the NBA. I do. And he seems like the type of kid who wants to be great, not just good. So that should, I believe he's got the right mindset.
Yeah.
No, but let me put it this way. If there was somebody that was just a little closer to him in college right now, my war room would have a really tough night deciding who I'm taking.
What about his teammate?
Nah, I mean, Cam, which one?
RJ Barrett.
Barrett, Cam? No, there's a while where I thought Barrett might actually. I've flipped. I've seen too much from Zion.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Barrett, too.
Yeah,
I do.
Shooting. It's interesting when you look at their stats because they're about the same points per game. And the stat that we're showing on CBS Sports Network doesn't indicate, you know, the fact that RJ Barrett, to get to those 22 points a game, has taken about 200 more shots. than Zion Williamson has. He's always significantly less efficient. So you can see by his field goal percentage, mm-hmm. you know, 44% to
60. Yeah, but 45% is pretty good for a freshman.
Of course.
45% is still
of
good.
Of course, but he takes a lot of shots.
He
does. Whereas Zion gets his 22 points and not nearly as many shots. So, I mean, a lot of them are high-efficiency shots, meaning dunks or around the rim, you know, baby jumpers and things like that. He hasn't developed his mid-range and long-range game, even though he can knock them down. It's just not a skill set yet. If he's going to be great in the NBA, he has to develop that. Not dissimilar to Blake Griffin. Like, Blake Griffin had to develop that for him to become more than just a dunker.
But Blake's 6'9".
I know, and that's the difference.
That's three inches right there.
That's the challenge that you look at with Zion Williamson. Look, he's a college star, and there's no doubt about it. He should go number one overall. You should be clamoring to see him play in college. The question that a lot of people are going to start asking as we get closer to the NCAA tournament and we're actually the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament is, knowing that he's one and done, what kind of pro is he going to be?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as clear cut as people want to make it out to be.
All right, 1-855-212-4227, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Yeah, he's going to go number one overall, but the question is, and we and I can tap into this coming up next here, is it because he's truly the best player? There's other elements at play here. And you and I will kick those around coming up next here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line. 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody, quick way to save a little money. Just switch over to Geico. Whether it's homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, get it all. Geico.com. Got Paul Azinger coming up next segment here. Former PGA golfer, good one as well. And the lead analysts for the Golf Channel as the golf season begins to get underway. Did you see, this is a quick aside here, did you see the picture of Phil Mickelson's calves?
Calves?
I know that sounds really weird. Did you see that?
No, I was
not. That had to be Photoshopped, DCL, is it?
It's calves. Not proportional to the rest of his body.
Mike, find a picture, please, and tweet this out. And by the way, when you're on our account, just go and vote. The best landing spot for Le'Veon Bell, something Tiki and I led the show with. And we'll get back to that, we promise, at Tiki and Tierney. 42% of you say the Jets, 19% say the Eagles, 19% say the Niners, 20% say others, and the Texans have gotten some run.
Bucks.
The Bucks, Tiki voted for the Bucks, yep. So a few other teams have squeezed in there. Phil Mickelson's calf, because now they're allowed to wear shorts during the practice rounds and the pro-ams.
Yep.
And he put out a little picture on it. I think it was, I don't know if it was Twitter or Instagram, but his calves, I've never seen anything like it. Especially, you're right, it's not proportionate to the rest of his body. Like, Phil in person, I don't think the average fan realizes, Phil is a big man.
Yeah.
He's a little more than 6'4", and I don't want to say he's got guns, but he's stronger and in better shape than you would think.
Okay.
But he's got a little love handles, a little bit of the moobs, you know what I mean? Those calves are impressive. Did you see those?
I'm looking at it right now.
Come on. Are those real? You're an athlete.
I think
they look
is.
Pretty real, right?
I think it is real. It definitely
what do you think,
is Santa? Real.
I'm
definitely
real?
Buying it. Because if you look at the picture, he's just finishing a chip.
Yeah.
So
they would be engaged, right?
Exactly.
Those
look
things
at it,
are
they're
impressive.
Like, they're stretched. They're like.
Yeah.
Like, so I ride a bike, and when
Dude,
I have
much,
my.
Look at those things.
Yeah, when I have my shorts on, I'm riding my bike, my calves look twice as big as they really are. It's just flexing and unflexing.
Your calves don't look like that, Mike. Stop.
I'm not saying like that.
You can
I'm
ride
just saying
to China.
That.
Your
no,
calves
no, I'm
aren't
saying they look,
like
bigger
that.
Than they really actually are because of the flexing and unflexing.
I hear you.
I think that's just a flattering picture.
But incredibly flattering.
How much weight did he lose?
I don't think he's lost any weight.
No,
I think
like
he's probably still around 230.
No, from his, like, remember, because a while ago, I'm talking about like.
Yeah, when he, you know, when he had the moves.
Yeah, he was big, right?
He was never. He tightened up. He tightened up. I don't. Maybe he was 8, 9, 10 pounds.
I only say
chubbier,
that because I have a buddy who's a running buddy of mine. I've told you about this, Adam, who ran the New York City Marathon with me. Mm-hmm. He used to be 300 something pounds. Like, he went to college and just whatever, lost it, got huge.
Mm-hmm.
Now he runs, and he runs like a ridiculous.
The guy who came
yeah,
in here
Adam.
One day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He was. Like,
that's
he,
amazing.
You see how he's thin he is now, right?
Very thin. Yeah.
He's got enormous.
He's got calves like that.
Absolutely. He
no
does.
Way.
I swear to you, BT.
Let me see. I'm jealous of these things. Let me get another look at this. Look at those. I mean, this is, you're going the wrong way. I think I,
there it is.
Look at those things. Those things are incredible. I guess they're real. Okay. Wow.
They need their own social media handle.
Yes.
Phil Mickelson's
Lefty's calves.
Lefty's calves.
Lefty's legs. How about this? I was doing a little research. I did not know this. Ack is going to pretend that he knows this because even though he knows a lot, but I don't know if he knows this. He, although he's got one of those weird minds, kind of like me, but times 10. Because he's got nothing else going on. He might remember this. I'm just kidding, Ack. How about the 1979, back to Duke and Carolina. You ready? Duke 47, UNC 40. This is the invention of the airball chant.
Was that like 1812 with the hat?
Here we go. We're in the area. Okay, no, no, no. Not 1812, but this game, this is 1970. This is not 1939. This is 1979. A couple years before Jordan went there. All right? This game featured one of the most boring halves in NCAA basketball history. Before the game, Dean Smith decided he would run the four corners. We know about that. For the entire game, in an age with no shot clock, you could do this. This meant UNC could simply hold the ball and refuse to let Duke take a shot. Mm. The first half ended 7-0.
Oh, wow.
In 1979.
That's miserable.
It also featured the first ever recorded appearance of the famous air ball chant in college basketball after UNC's Rich Yonacor, against orders, decided to take a mid-range jumper. How dare you take a wide-open 14-footer? You're expelled. It missed everything. UNC's only other shot of the half was an air ball. They took two shots the entire half, and thus the famous fan tactic was born. Wow. I never knew that.
That's miserable basketball to watch.
It is, but it's even more miserable and perplexing considering that, I know 1979 was a long time ago, but I mean, it's really not when you consider that several years after that, guys that we grew up playing, watching, were playing.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, like Ralph Sampson was at Virginia. Mullen was going to St. John's. MJ was going to UNC. That's crazy. 7-0. Man, I wish I had the under that day.
Good old Rich Yonacor, number 50.
What was the final?
I'm 5 years old. Hey, Dad, put the under in. We got Duke and UNC tonight. What'd you say, Ack?
Good old Rich Yonacor, number 50.
Rich Yonacor. Is that Yonacor?
Yonacor.
Yonacor. How do you spell it?
Yanokur.
Nope. Akor.
Akor. Okay. Yeah, that was close.
So it's pronounced like Yamaka, almost.
Yeah, almost.
Yanokur?
Yanokur.
Or pronounced like moniker.
Moniker.
Yes. Probably a better way to think of it. Okay.
Nice.
Hey, man. So do you have your little mindless piece of Duke, Duke UNC trivia?
No. But history? But should Zion Williamson be the number one overall pick just because he's the most exciting player in basketball?
Well, no. But
should he?
If he didn't have the skill to back up the style, then the answer would be no.
Does he have the skill? Can he develop the skill?
Of course he does.
What does he play when he gets to the NBA?
Depends upon the team. I think
think about this.
I think he starts as a wing. He's not going to be a conventional two guard. He's going to be a three or four.
Don't wings have to knock down open J's?
I mean, he will eventually.
Okay.
You don't think he's going to get a jump shot?
I do, but he's not LeBron.
Ack. And I want, obviously, T. But
he's an athlete. He's a super athlete.
I know. But unlike LeBron, you know, at least he's had a year. You know, LeBron went right from high school to the NBA.
LeBron's 6'9".
I understand that. But in terms of at least streamlining his jump shot every day in practice and watching film and working on the angles and the technical aspect of shooting, he's had teaching that LeBron didn't have in high school just based on the laboratory.
So what's more important, the athleticism or in the potential highlight ability or the acumen to shoot, right, and knock down.
Well, I don't know if shooting's an acumen. I would just say it's a skill.
Well, I'm trying to think of No, I'm trying to think of the right. Like R.J. Barrett takes the shot for Duke, right? It's not Zion. It's R.J.
Who did they beat? I was in the car about a month and a half ago.
Cam Reddish.
Florida State at the Horn.
Cam Reddish.
Yeah,
right? Cam Reddish, right? Cam takes that shot.
Cam or Barrett.
Yeah, it's not Zion.
Unless they double-team the other guys and they force. I don't think Zion's reticent to let one fly if they're down by two. I mean, I'm not saying that's the first thing you diagram in the huddle there, but the thing about any great coach, and you know this, there's the play and then there's the subset to the play and maybe even a subset to the subset of the play. You've got to anticipate what the opponent's going to do. And a lot of it's a basic understanding of what they do well and you knowing what you don't do well and you knowing what they'll try to exploit in terms of what you don't do well. So you coach around that. And, you know, once you get to that second tier, if you will, there's got to be somebody who might have the ball who's not option number one, But they have to have that inherent trust in from the staff and certainly within to let it go. And you know, I think tonight if Duke is down, even not even like at the horn, even if Duke is down by like seven and there's, I don't know, a minute and 46 seconds left and you got to start scoring here, it's time and possession, and he's open for three, he's going to shoot it. I mean, he's not Ben Simmons.
I know, but I'm just wondering.
You know who's the poster boy, though, for you can improve the shot in the pros?
Hold on. You can improve the shot in the pros.
It's LeBron.
Well, first of all, Michael Jordan became a terrific shooter in the NBA, although he knocked down the shot as a freshman, too.
Kawhi Leonard.
I don't remember watching Kawhi at San Diego State too much.
Big knock on him was, will he be able to shoot on the NBA level? And the Spurs have a great shooting coach. They worked with him. He's got a beautiful-looking shot now. Mm-hmm. And look
mid-range. He's okay from three. His mid-range jump shot is pure.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys, you know, came into the league. Dominique Wilkins was coming out of Georgia primarily. We had Nico on this. We talked about this. His shooting was kind of overlooked. He was, you know, I'm not saying he was going 40% from downtown, but you get the reps up. You know, you can either jump or you can't.
Yeah.
Shooting is a learned thing. You don't come out of the womb. You might come out with certain, like, depth perception instincts that help. In terms of shooting well, like Steph Curry, I'm sure he got something from his dad because Seth is good and even Steph's mom is good. She's flinging in one-handed shots at the All-Star game, you know, underhanded from half court. The Currys could shoot. But you got to work on that. But you come out as a baby, as an infant, you're either predisposed to jump or you're not. I mean, you agree with that, right?
Of course I do. Okay, but is that worth the number one overall pick, just being the athlete?
But he's not just the athlete. The guy's averaging 9 rebounds and 24 points a game.
The best athlete, 22.7.
Okay.
The best athlete in basketball. Does that guarantee him number one, even though he's 6'6"?
Yes.
Okay.
Who else would you even consider taking?
His teammate.
Barrett. No. Would you?
Yeah.
You would take Barrett over Zion Williamson.
I think it would be tough because I think you're going to have to deal with, look at this guy, he's an athletic specimen. Yeah. But Barrett,
we sell tickets early.
Yeah. But Barrett, I really like Barrett a lot.
You know, it's funny because I you were out of the room. I said that. And I was dancing internally in my mind, that dance for about...
You're right. I remember
that?
The beginning. Yeah.
Good 3 or 4 week period. And now I'm the other way. I've seen enough of Zion. I've seen enough handle. Well,
the other thing about Zion is he plays both ends of the floor. And so many guys have said this, including his head coach. He has so much energy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He's got he's got an easy joy for the game.
Yeah, that's true.
He does. It just comes. He's got an effervescence, which is contagious.
He works his ass off on the defensive side.
He does. You know... If you're driving around and you're watching this on TV, it's probably better, so I won't go too much on this. But, like, the one thing – and watch this tonight with Zion. You know, it's not like he's just this muscle-chiseled, you know, straight point A to point B driver of the ball. Like, you'll see him, like, twist in and out. Like, he'll go, and he's got wiggle that I wasn't sure that he had on the dribble when I first saw him play in November. He's going number one.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is where he goes. Like, let's say he goes to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's going to be counted on to score. He goes to the Knicks, which I know you'd love. And and hypothetically, let's say they get two of those free agents they're looking for. He doesn't have to shoot. I mean, he'll get his share, but, look, as long as he's on the floor, he's a physical presence, he plays defense, he's in good shape.
No doubt about it. Let's get the update from Mac. We'll get a little golf coming up. The Zinger, Paul Azinger, coming up next on Tiki and Tierney. Here's Rich Ackerman. Tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, CBS Sports Network presents back-to-back Big East matchup. Xavier meets Seton Hall. And follow that, you got number 11 Marquette and the Golden Eagles, Wojo. He can probably keep an eye on the Duke game, but he's got a coach as well. As they battle Butler, and then at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, don't miss the 6th-rated Nevada Wolfpack. Coach Musselman, we had him on the show the other day. They take on the Aztecs of San Diego State. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206. So aside from Phil's Cavs getting a lot of run on social media, golf season's off and running, and it's been a pretty good start. And we've got really the dawn of a new era. Paul Azinger makes his official debut as the NBC new lead analyst tomorrow. It's the WGC Mexico Championship. I believe Phil won that a year ago in extra holes, I think, and also a part of the network coverage over the course of the next 6 weeks on the PGA Tour. Live coverage of the WGC Mexico can be seen on Thursday and Friday on the Golf Channel. Third and final round coverage will continue on NBC this weekend. Zinger, what's going on, buddy? Welcome back, Tiki and Tierney. How are you?
Well, I'm fantastic. It's great to be on with you guys. Rondé Barber played in Tampa for us, and I say us. It's like, you know how it is when the player shoots 90? Yep. He shot 90, he shot 68, we shot 68.
Yep.
We, because that's, Rondé was awesome. And Tiki, you too, man. I admire both you guys forever.
My golf game is nowhere near Rondé's. Rondé can sometimes shoot in the 80s or in the 70s. I have never broken 90.
He doesn't play much, though, Paul. He doesn't play much.
Me and BT are the same. Hey, look.
It's always that way, though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he lives in Florida. I mean, all his buddies are golf pros, and he knows all of you all. So he gets some tips and pointers and clubs. I got to take his hand-me-downs and hope that it's not raining or snowing on any given day. Look, BT and I were just talking about the new schedule as it's come out with the Players in March and obviously the Masters, and then you get the PGA in May, U.S. Open, and then the Open Championship in June and July, respectively. How does that change anything for the golfers? Does it feel more like a season as opposed to having it kind of spread out? And also, as BT and I always talk about, competing with the NFL, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you're not going to win that battle against the NFL. And the tour's been trying to, they've been trying to avoid going against the NFL for a long time, and they thought the original FedEx Cup was going to do that. But the next thing you know, you're just bleeding right into the NFL season. But I think they've got a true handle on it now.
Yeah.
But in order to do it, they had to create a wraparound season. You know, the Florida Swing was like the sixth or seventh or eighth tournament of the year, seventh probably of the year. Now it's the 16th or 17th tournament of the year. It's just different, and it takes some getting used to. The schedule change, I think, is really interesting. The old schedule for TPC Sawgrass was in March, always in March, and I love that date. I was one that didn't really like the move to May. I like the idea that they're moving back. I'm shocked that the PGA of America took the PGA from August and moved it to May.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a fantastic date for them, and it's going to give them a lot more options where they can go, because let's face it, in August it's hot everywhere, and they can never get the greens up to speed like they'd like at the PGA Championships, because it'll kill them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
There's been a lot of adjustments made. You know, Tiger's never been down here in Mexico City to play, but he's here now.
I know. And Phil won it last year, right?
Mickelson won last year. I can see, you know, after going around this course, I've been around it twice now, it's tree-lined and it's tough, but, man, it's the bomber's paradise, because you can hit long irons out there where these other fellows are hitting their driver. You got them beat. And, you know, it's Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, DJ, and Phil. Basically, we're all the guys in contention the last few years. So they're bombers. This course, to me, sets up perfect for Tiger and that bullet two-iron. I think he's going to hit a lot of those, and I think these guys are going to get 7 or 8 wedges every day.
Interesting.
They'll probably eat it up.
Yeah,
it's awesome, though. It's just like L.A. You know, the grass is that Kikuyu stuff, and it's the Polenta greens. It's exactly the same. I don't know. I'm thinking Tiger all the way. And he's a guy that's really had to adjust his schedule.
Yep.
He finished second at the Valspar last year. I don't know if he'll even play that this year because of the new schedule. So it's interesting to see. It's weird to look at the money list and see all these guys that did all their damage in the fall, and you're like, well, what happened? I didn't even see it. I was watching football.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right, man.
That's
so
funny.
Paul, let me ask you this. Total Paul Azinger, new lead analyst for the Golf Channel here, NBC, of course, and we've got a good event coming up this weekend. Paul ran through some of the names. J.B. Holmes, let's face it. We always joke, Tiki and I are poor golfers, but I watch a lot more golf than Tiki. I'll watch the European event. I'll try to get tips. I'll watch it all the time. I don't want to watch J.B. Holmes play a back nine in 3.5 hours. Now, I'll watch Tiger. I'll watch Phil. I'll watch Dustin Johnson. I'll watch Brooks Koepka play golf if it's a slow pace on the back nine. J.B. Holmes, no disrespect to J.B. Holmes, I'm not interested in that. However, I know that it was a very odd weekend in the sense starting, stopping, starting. Was he really at blame, or was it the circumstances of the weird weather that gives him an out for the slow play? How did you see it?
Well, JB's one of my good buddies. He was on our winning Ryder Cup team back in 2008. He was kind of the hero in a lot of ways. And so I really like him, but he's got to go faster. He's got to figure out a way to go faster. He needs to be more ready before he starts going into that pre-shot thing. It's just too slow. Slow play's been a problem on the tour since it began, I think. And I remember Trevino complaining about how slow it was in the 60s and 70s, and Nicklaus was the problem, and blah, blah, blah. The only solution to slow play the first few days is to shorten the field, which I'm against, and the only other solution is to penalize these guys. J.B. Holmes, in his defense, wasn't even on the clock.
I know.
That group wasn't out of position, so what's he supposed to do? I mean, he's playing for millions. He could have been caught off guard because Justin Thomas let a four-shot lead go away. And then all of a sudden, you're leading. That'll put you in lockdown if you're not careful. And I think J.B. Holmes can go into lockdown. I believe it's a negative effect on his game, even though he won. He's going to have to figure out a way to pull that up all together a little quicker, or he's just a royal pain to watch.
Yeah.
Okay. Even as you guys are buddies, and you say that, so I don't feel bad about what I said.
He's like lining up.
I love him. I'll say something to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
tell him to pick it up, dude. Pick up the pace, Holmes.
He was lining up the one footers with like his club.
I know.
Like, hey, I'm like, what are you doing?
Come on, man. Just tap it in with your big toe.
Hey. You ever hit a one-footer on Poana Greens late in the day?
No.
As long as it's green, I'm not really complaining.
If I missed it, I wouldn't mind. Like J.B. Holmes would have.
I would just pick it up. I probably wouldn't even punt. That's good. It's a gimme. It's a gimme in our world here, you know? It's a gimme.
There's so much money, though.
I'm teasing. I know,
If J.B. Holmes went 15 seconds faster, you know, or 25 seconds faster, we would love that. But if it cost him one shot, you know, and that's his mindset, he thinks that it – he just can't not be fully secure in what he's about to try to do. You know, that swing only takes 1 second, maybe a second and a half. And there's all that preparation before that second and a half. So you can make that swing with no words. That's the key. Can that second or two be without words? And it takes him a long time to get to that place where he knows where he's going to start this ball in the whole nine yards. I've been through it, but I was a fast player. You know what I used to do if I – if I had a super slow player in the group, I'd call the official over and ask them when they could start timing us to speed this guy up.
Oh, man, they must have loved you.
Right? I got to get to 19. Hurry it up, buddy. Hey, Paul, in 08, you were the captain of the Ryder Cup. We know the issues last year. Jim Furyk was the captain. Steve Stricker was just announced as the captain of the 2020 Ryder Cup. What's going to change? Because something needs to change. It was a little dysfunctional this year.
Home course is about the only thing. I mean, Stricker's been an assistant, and he's been the captain of the President's Cup, so he knows what to do.
Yeah.
He knows how to do it. The United States has got to figure out a way to win these matches. I mean, that last Ryder Cup team we took to Europe, I said, this is it. The streak is over.
Yep.
We're going to throttle those boys.
We said the same thing.
The dead opposite happened. If you look down the list of 12 names, there's not one name on there you would have said, well, let's just trade him for this American that didn't get on the team. There's not one. We had the best possible Ryder Cup team. And they just sent us packing. And I don't know. There's a dynamic, you know, that you have to create in that team room. And you're going to create an environment. And sometimes that environment, you know, our teams have been too casual. Sometimes we've been too amped up, too stressed. There's a perfect blend there somewhere. And what we need to do is put a microphone in that European team room and a secret camera.
Get some tips.
See what the heck they're doing. Because they get the most out of themselves.
Yeah.
They get, you know, that's the key, isn't it? Under pressure, can I get the most out of my game today? And they get the most out of their game. They've got a built-in chip on their shoulder to beat the big, powerful Americans, and they've been doing it quite often lately. It's making me sick.
Us too, because the one before that on our soil, Patrick Reed was a beast. Mm-hmm. I mean, we won. It was nice. I was very surprised how poorly we played. Paul, we've got, I don't even know if we have enough time to ask you, maybe 20 seconds. Can you give us a little take on the players putting with the pin in? Not a lot of time. Can you give it to us quick?
Yeah, I think the jury's still out on that. You know, it's debatable. Bryson says he's going to putt with it in. I just think you can get weird shadows and stuff like that. I tried to putt with it in, and I haven't made a putt yet, so I'm pulling it out.
Okay. Nice. Zinger, have a great
– doesn't it look weird? I'm waiting for some guy to tap in a three-footer downhill at Augusta.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to look weird.
You think somebody would do that? Really, at Augusta, 3 feet? I know you're saying that because it's incredibly slick.
If you got a three-footer to win the Masters straight down the hill,
yeah,
and you leave that pin in – I guarantee you're leaving the pin.
Wow. Okay. All right. Something else to look forward to. Hey. The Masters and golf season's underway. Have a great, great official debut. NBC Sports new. Great. Congrats on the promotion, man.
Congrats, Paul.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
All right. You got it, man. There you go. Paul Azinger, WGC, the Mexico Championship, beginning tomorrow and Friday.
Big purse out there, BT.
What is it, about 1.5, 1.6? I don't even know. I didn't check the number.
1.7 was last year, so it's probably up from that.
Yeah.
But It's a $10 million total purse.
Golf golf is pretty fruitful, in case we're just learning that. Back to Le'Veon Bell next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.